Going live. Here we go.
And we are live.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Growing Efficiency Podcast, episode 167. This week, we have Symbiotic Aquaponics all the way from Oklahoma. How's it going?
Good. Thank you for having us.
They'll be presenting with myself at the Aquaponics Association's conference coming up. Our particular segment will be on September 22nd. The conference is from the 20th through the 22nd, but if you're looking to learn more about global GAP food certification, they have a special workshop on the 19th as well, if you're looking to learn more about that. And if you aren't familiar with global GAP, go to that. You should know about that. It's important because it's going to matter sooner than later, especially even if you're just a vegetable producer, because they're going to move in and start, you know, using GAP certification for even in the United States within the near future. The USDA has already signaled that they want to start regulating aquaponics. So that's an easy way for them to do it. Oh, snap. It's JR Token.
What's up, guys?
Oh, snap. JR's in the house tonight. Welcome, welcome.
How's it going?
Man, I'm
glad to have you, man.
We're already on live, so go ahead.
Awesome. So, JR Token, thanks for joining us.
No problem. Am I sideways, guys, or am I
face? You're perfect.
You're good now. So, JR, what are you doing this weekend? I'll be in Portland.
Oh, you are? I'm not doing a single thing.
All right, Friday night, we're chilling.
Hell yeah.
All right.
Are you serious, Steve? I was thinking about going down there.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'll chill.
Okay. Oh my God.
We also have Tara. How's it going, Tara?
Good. I'm good. How are you? Hi. Welcome everybody tonight, and very nice to meet our guest tonight. I have not met him before, so I'm totally going to be updated here tonight. And I know Marty and Roger, and I know JR because we've been hanging out lately. And yeah. So thanks, Steve, for having me on.
Awesome. Thanks for coming on.
Same here. Thanks for having me on.
Hell yeah. We also have Marty.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Good to see you, JR. Nice
How's
to meet you,
going, Marty.
Roger, Terry.
Hey, everybody.
And we have Roger from I Love Grow Marijuana.
Hey, welcome to the show, everyone, tonight. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, as usual.
Oh, yeah. All righty. Well, Kevin, why don't you tell us a little about what you do and what you're all about? It's been a little while since we had an aquaponics person on, and it's really cool to have you on. I know you're like me, you do a lot of work both in vegetables and in cannabis. You do a lot of work out of Oklahoma, and you guys are working on a lot of different setups as well. So thanks for joining us.
No problem at all, and thank you for the introduction. Yeah, the company's name is Symbiotic Aquaponic. We're based out of Oklahoma, as Steve said. To all the other guests, thank you very much for having me and inviting me into your circle. Hopefully I can share some knowledge and also learn along the way. So what we've been doing for the past 7 years is designing, engineering, and building aquaponic systems. We've currently built about 100 or so aquaponic systems, I think a few more, across about 10 different states. Here in Oklahoma, we had been designing and engineering aquaponic systems, and the cannabis industry kind of found us. So before that, we were focused on USDA certified organic vegetable production and dabbled in raising a few different fish species. I actually started the aquaponic program at Eastern Oklahoma State College and helped start the aquaponics program at Redlands Community College, where we had our curriculum approved by the state regents and teach aquaponics as a 3-hour class for sustainable ag. And in addition to that, my profession is law, and I have done some extensive work with aquaponics and USDA organic certification. We were the first company after the National Organic Standards Board stated that aquaponics, hydroponics, and aeroponics could be organic to get organic certification through Oregon Tilth as our third party certifying agent. And we
That's awesome.
Were the first, as far as I know, to have an organic cannabis harvest because through the Oklahoma Industrial Hemp Pilot Program, we had a USDA certified organic system at Eastern Oklahoma State College and pulled a CBD crop off of that at the end of last year. So we feel like we're doing some really neat things in the space, and I'm happy to share any knowledge, expertise, and failures to help move the community along.
That's really awesome. So tell us about what cultivars were you guys growing over there in your CBD run?
Yeah, so we started out with cherry wine and a cherry blossom. We started with non-feminized seed stock, and we use a media-based aquaponic system that we pair with some mechanical bead filtration to strip out any of our excess solids before entering into our grow beds. We pop seeds directly into the system and get nice, healthy mother plants established before taking clones and taking things all the way through harvest. So with the first harvest, we were really dependent upon the sun because our infrastructure wasn't built out for cannabis initially. Like I said previously, we were raising tomatoes and peppers and lettuce and herbs and starter plants that we were selling to high-end restaurants in Tulsa and Oklahoma City. But when the cannabis space opened up, we already had the organic certification. We had the standard operating procedures, the GAP plans, and the colleges in Oklahoma decided they would give us the opportunity to grow, and we've had an unlimited license to do that since then. And then after that, Oklahoma legalized medicinal marijuana, and really, it's the Wild West, for a lack of a better term. Anybody with $2,500 and a dream essentially can get a license. So we've been doing a lot of environmental engineering and design, moving from some greenhouse operations to some indoor room within a room technology, and then also pairing that with some field grown cannabis that we've started from clones or starter plants in our system. So it's been a wild ride over the past couple of years here.
So what are some of the methods that you're using to deal with the additional mineralization that's required for cannabis?
So we, in our media beds, get some additional mineralization, and then we also use a fish feed that's tailored with the micros and the macros that we need at the different stages of growth for the plant. When we want to induce flowering, we can strip the nitrogen from the plant by manually backwashing our filters and inducing the flowering state, doing everything in the media bed. So we've been able to take crops all the way from seed through harvest without having to move them in the system or out of the system.
And how have you found that it affects your cannabinoid and terpene profiles?
Man, we're getting really great test results. So obviously our product is testing 0 parts per million on all heavy metals and pesticides. And we're getting great cannabinoid profiles. We're getting high THC contents and high CBD contents, consistent with the strains that we're growing and the breeder recommendations. So we've actually been really happy with the progress and how it's turned out over the past couple of years. Like anything, it's not without any failures, but we've tried to turn some of those failures into opportunities. And some of the biggest issues that we've had have been with ebb and flow and Bell siphon based systems. So we have tried our best, and I think we have actually eliminated Bell siphons on large scale commercial media based systems by integrating a little bit of indexing and sequencing. And we're building out a large scale operation, about 12,000 square foot of condition space in Oklahoma currently. So,
what do you mean by indexing and sequencing?
So rather than have the beds fill through a water inlet and then drain with a Bell siphon or being hooked up to a direct flow system, what we're able to do is control the amount of water that gets introduced to our grow beds through an actuator valve system set up to a timer. We link our grow beds together in long rows and place a sensor at the end of the beds. As soon as water levels reach a certain level on that bed, cuts off the water filling actuator, opens the water draining actuator, and begins to fill the next bed. So it's a fully automated technology, and we're think it's really going to be a game changer.
Killer.
So I did some work with indexing valves in Jamaica, and the downside is that if your indexing valves fail and you don't realize it, those plants can get toasted pretty quickly. And you absolutely can do that, and you can save money on the reservoir sizes. You can run four beds instead of one bed off the same water volume size. So you can reduce the overhead, but you're putting an awful lot of trust into one failure point, which can be a very expensive failure point if you lose four whole rows at once, which is the reason why we've moved away from it with some of our other ones. Whereas redundancy with pumps and bell siphons, we found we don't have that same, you know, if my pump goes down, the other pump turns on and we're good, right? Whereas with the indexing valves, it's a lot harder to put redundancy from a standpoint of having that kind of constant backup without that level of automation, especially when you scale up to really, really large. It's just something, one of the issues I would just bring up with that particular technology.
Yeah, for sure. So we've been very lucky to attract some really high-end talent to the space. We've got mechanical engineers that have been working with our team for the past year or so, really helping us perfect this design. But to your point, anytime you enter in something mechanical into the equation, it has the opportunity to break. But with the new design, we've also paired some pretty advanced water quality monitoring systems, as well as some manual overrides and controls. So we're able to go in and limit some of those points of failures and bypass them remotely if necessary. So nothing's perfect. We don't have it up and operational fully as of yet. Everything looks great on paper and when the engineers are talking about it, but in practice, that's another thing. So hope to be back on here in a couple of months reporting that it was a wild success and being able to share some more with you all about it.
Well, no, it's just awesome that you've thought of those things, and I'm happy to hear that. That's freaking awesome.
How long have you guys had them implemented?
The indexing and sequencing design, or just aquaponic system design in general?
The indexing and sequencing.
We have a small scale prototype that's functioning, and we're building out our first large scale system literally today.
Awesome! That's so cool. Yeah, I'm a big fan of like external siphons where you can link multiple siphons, multiple beds off of one siphon. So I do most of mine as external U siphons. So I'll have usually up to about four media beds on one external U siphon that are all plumbed together.
Yeah, that's an awesome solution as well. And what we had done in the past is when we link five or six beds together on bell siphons, we'll find that the bell siphons will pop or they'll jump a little bit depending on how much oxygen is getting introduced into the system. So introducing some vent pipes has helped us out as well, deal with that problem. But it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. We really think it's going to be something that is going to create a more scalable design, and it's going to really help us cut input costs on systems and hopefully maximize productivity while minimizing inputs. So we've been hard at work with our nose down, and hopefully it'll yield some good results.
That's awesome. Obviously all the stuff I've done is on very small scale, which is much different than what you guys are going for. So I totally understand the desire to want to cut down on the number of parts that you have to buy when you have, hundreds of media beds. It's a little different than when you have like five or six. So I totally understand the desire to scale, and everything we do on the small scale doesn't fit up there.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound like we haven't utilized bell siphon technology on every single system that we've built today.
I can understand that.
This is a brand new deal that I just like talking about. At the end of the day, the bell siphon, same technology Romans use to move water through the aqueducts. If they're built correctly, they function most of the time.
They function until they fail, right?
Do you know who actually invented the bell siphon? It was actually an ancient Greek. Do you know who it was?
Ancient Greek? Okay, excuse me.
The Romans used it. Absolutely. You were not incorrect in that statement. You were 100% correct. But Pythagoras, the ancient Greek, was the one who invented it. He invented the Pythagorean cup, which was also called the Greek cup, which has a built-in bell siphon in it for people that pour too much wine into their wine glass, and it pours it out all over them. But yes, they absolutely use it in the aqueducts as well.
Yeah, and so the low-tech solutions are definitely there for the backyard participant, for the school participant, for people that are trying to access aquaponics that like to use Bell Siphon technology and media-based systems. That's a wonderful combination, and it's got us by for a very long time, but we're tired of making media screens and tired of making Bell Siphons, and looking forward to getting that grow space back as well, because to the point earlier, I think it was Marty, you know, that's probably a good reason to use those external siphons as well, is because when you use the internal siphon on the grow bed, that's grow space that you're sacrificing. So we think we're going to be able to get at least one more plant in each bed just by eliminating that Bell Siphon. And we also think that between our nutrient mix with our feeds and the control that we have over the watering cycle, we'll be able to really hone in on the bio-nutrient availability for each plant species or cultivar that we're growing. So we think that the system will be multi-purposed, and people say, yeah, that the cannabis market is, you know, going to come and go, and we completely agree. But what we want to do is grow a system that's going to be functional to grow whatever that highest value crop is. And that's really how we got in the cannabis space to begin with.
Right. You can't really argue in terms of, you know, price per pound. Like, I don't care how good your hot peppers are. No offense, Roger, but you're not getting in pounds. You know what I'm saying? You're not moving the packs, Roger.
Well, and we had done.
What do you mean?
I'm just poking fun at him, but you'll understand. I'm sure as somebody who's obviously crunched the numbers on what you can get in return in cannabis versus what you can get in literally any other vegetable or.
We were doing the loose leaf lettuce at high end restaurants, and I was getting $2 a pound. And we were doing the basil, the oregano, the thyme, the marjoram, and we were getting $8 a pound. You know, but USDA certified organic CBD brings anywhere from $300 to $500 per pound. And obviously, you can't call cannabis that's high in THC USDA certified organic, but properly cultivated in an aquaponic system. You know, in Oklahoma, the price levels are still there. And they're not always going to be where they're at. So that's why we're really trying to design around efficiencies. And that's one of the reasons why we also pivoted to looking at some indoor technology and starting to design and engineer spaces, not just systems, because the fact of the matter is that the environment is what's going to be the single biggest limiting factor for the system. So when we build people's systems, we don't want them to fail because of a crappy environment. And the best way that we figured to solve that was start designing both.
Plus, it has a huge impact on your ongoing costs, which I feel like is something that people don't necessarily take into account in there. Especially, I mean, because I have a lot of experience with a lot of black market growers that, you know, essentially trying to go legal. And that's always a struggle for them, right? To be able to understand what your costs are. That's never really something that black market growers were really all that good at. You know, it was sort of like cash in, cash out, and here's yours, and okay, we're done. So there's not a lot of understanding on that business side, to where your environment, like how much are you going to be paying in electricity every month, is something that I have to ask people that are serious on a regular basis. They're like, have applied for licensing, and they have no projection on how much it'll cost. Maybe they've calculated the lights, but not the heating and air conditioning. You know, so it just becomes one of those bridges that have to be gapped. And the environment is not only gonna put a cap on how much you can yield based on how you design it, but it's also going to determine what your ongoing costs are. And so, you know, that type of planning is extremely important in my opinion.
You bet. And that was my background at the college. I was an economics instructor and a criminal law instructor. So we approached aquaponics from an input-output philosophy. And you're exactly right. When we went to design indoor environments, people thought we were crazy for hanging 150 LED lights in our indoor facility. But what they didn't realize was that if we would have hung high-pressure sodium, we would have had to upsize our air handlers by a factor that would have made it more expensive to hang the high pressure sodium lights that were the cheaper lights.
Right. But then they'll sit there and go, LEDs are so expensive. You're like, well, let's talk bottom line. You know, yeah,
And we've always talked about it with greenhouses, right? It's like you can put the 8mm film on a greenhouse or you can put double wall poly, right? Double wall poly is more expensive, but your R values are better and your ongoing costs are going to be cheaper and you're going to make up that money in the long run. So to your point, it's all about design efficiencies and environmental controls. And man, in Oklahoma, Steve can tell you, he was here in the summers, it gets dadgum hot. And I don't care how much environmental control you have in a greenhouse or how nice of a greenhouse you have, man, it's still not a friendly environment at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on August the 5th in a greenhouse in Oklahoma. So those are things that we kind of take into consideration.
As long as you heard that, I did my years in Texas, but Steve just was in Oklahoma. It's hot. And even if it's dry heat, it's still hot, you know.
So as long as you keep the water cool, that's a little bit tricky. Geothermal can help quite a bit with that.
Yeah.
But if you can keep the water cool, the next biggest thing is making sure your silica levels are there. Silica plays a huge role in reducing heat stress in plants in particular. But we've had plants in Colorado even up to 105 in the greenhouse with no heat stress whatsoever, no foxtailing, you know, no herming, no negativity. As long as your silica levels were, you know, above 60 parts per million in that range, or above, obviously, depending on cultivar.
Don't you think also being in a bed or in the ground helps when you're trying to mitigate some of those heat issues versus being in a container?
Yes and no. It depends on where you are, but absolutely, it'll be definitely colder in the ground. Or with a really large container than it would for a small container, for sure.
Yeah, because a bed from the bed can be heated up too. Even an expansive bed can be heated up by the sun out in a greenhouse type situation. So maybe a container would be better in that situation. But in a dual root zone, you're using a container in a large massive media bed. So at least I don't know if Caven does it the same way or whatever, you know, because we haven't got to that, but. That's part of it too.
Yeah, and I think to the point that was made earlier, I think it was by Steve, what's really important and echoed by Roger is the root zone temperature, right? That's what's key. Well, that and ambient air temperature, because if your root zone is warm enough to convince the roots to grow and to uptake nutrients, and your ambient air is warm enough for that plant to expand, and the plant's going to grow. And so whether you're in a container or whether you're in the soil, you're going to get benefits one way or another, right? That's the same reason why people use raised beds to garden in soil, right? Because by using the raised bed, they're elevating the soil from the cold topsoil, and you're able to grow earlier on in the season. So I think regardless of container or soil, you're going to have some trade-offs one way or another. It's how you mitigate that and plan for that. But speaking of containers, have you guys seen the news here recently?
Well, you'll have to be a little less vague, my friend.
I apologize. So I spent the past 2 years or so working on convincing everybody that the way that we do aquaponics is USDA certified organic. We convinced our third-party certifying agent, but there is a small movement, or maybe a little bit larger movement, that is known as the real organic movement, that is trying to differentiate USDA certified organic.
Oh yes, we call them the soil Nazis.
The soilist is what we call them here. But then at the last conference that they were at, I asked them what soil was, and nobody could define it. So I thought that was kind of funny.
Well, so I love to go give talks, and I go, so you have terrestrial soil and you have aquatic soil. And aquatic soil is 167% more biodiverse than terrestrial soil. So why are we having this discussion?
Exactly.
So it's one of those, like, and there's NASA-based studies on this. If you ever need them, I'm happy to send you cited studies that are peer-reviewed that you can use to end this argument all day long. But yes, there's the group in Canada that's pushing to remove GAP certification. There's a couple of cannabis companies that are actually putting for it. Okay, so here's the deal. This is why this whole thing is funny, and I'm glad you brought this up. So cannabis companies, and in particular cannabis companies in Canada, have to test everything, absolutely everything in their facilities for pathogens. They have to test the tissue for pathogens, the water for pathogens. Everything's tested to the umpteenth degree in Canada, okay? There's data at multiple companies going back 1 to 2 years, many different harvests. All you have to do is ask these companies politely, can we get access to this, food safety data? And would you be willing to submit it anonymously into a general pool for the sake of using it against this in this court case, or even not anonymously in the case of this court case, so that we can make sure that you're allowed to still operate as a business? All these dudes would be all over that. You know, I don't think it's a problem. Green Relief and Stewart Life and Deepwater and, you know, all the different Aquilitas, I'm sure all of them would happily give up some of their data, at least to some anonymized degree, in order to still operate as a business and meet food safety regulation. You know, this is crazy. So I just laugh at this kind of stuff, because it's like, you know, all this data exists in the private sector already. There's no reason to even have this argument. It all exists because the cannabis industry has to test everything way past any of these veggie guys.
I have a question for you now. Go ahead, Roger.
All right, well, real quickly, and, you know, since it was mentioned earlier, it just brings me back to the little bit to say something about GAP certification. As Steve said, it's real important if you get a chance to go to a class, because it is a way they're trying to push. The USDA is real high on it, but that requires all kinds of testing and documentation and data, and you can, you know, but it also, on the upside, it's going to open doors that wouldn't be open to growers like us in the future. But it's expensive, and you're tested out the butt, and you got to have data and documentation on everything. I mean, every time a worker leaves the grow area, he's got to wash his hands. He's got to wash his hands on the way back, and you have to certify that and have it written down. You know, so yeah, it's good and it's bad. But I didn't know about the soul Nazis doing this. That's interesting. Go ahead, JR. I'm sorry.
I was kind of curious about, now that you've kind of switched up to cannabis because you saw that it was a viable, quite a bit higher paying product, and now that we have psilocybin legalized in Denver, Oakland, and now potentially in Oregon for the whole state, do you have thoughts of maybe shifting gears in that direction at all?
Yeah, so let me go back and I'll preface this a little bit, okay? It's not just that it's the highest value crop. Number one, our company was organized years ago with a social mission. We wanted to grow food and conserve natural resources in Southeast Oklahoma. So that's our passion. That's why we were organized in 2012. The Hitachi Foundation picked us as one of 5 companies nationwide to win their Young Entrepreneurship Award for our social entrepreneurship. We designed STEM education for K through 12. We developed college curriculum for colleges. So we are by no means a cannabis company, right? We are an aquaponic company that has moved into the cannabis space, but we moved into the cannabis space because we also feel that we're fulfilling that social need and that social goodwill, not only by growing a medication in a holistic manner, but also by providing jobs and opportunity in rural Southeast Oklahoma, which is one of the most economically depraved areas in the nation. So with that preface and with that being said, I think that any market opportunity that can help people is something that we would look at and we would consider. I think that especially underneath grow beds in controlled environments, there's a lot of negative space that's not being utilized for an output good. And with the little that I do know about mushroom cultivation for restaurants and for more edible consumption than psilocybin, is that you need an inoculated log in a wet or a dry area, depending on the stage, and dark, right? So now I'm thinking, well, we've got these grow beds, we've got all this space underneath, and we have this opportunity to use that negative space to help grow some medicine that can help out other people as well. And so long story short is, we've thought about it. We've considered it. In Oklahoma, I would be lying to you if I told you that I would be sitting right here and be able to cultivate high THC medical cannabis as we sit here today. So I don't think that's going to be anything that happens in Oklahoma in the next few years. I think we probably pushed our ballot initiatives as far as we can currently, but I would love to hear about the other folks in areas where that is legal and kind of what their plans are and how they want to integrate that.
Cool. Well, can you talk a little bit about like other things that you you guys did to adjust your systems, like whether it's design or you know, operations, or what challenges did you face transitioning to cannabis, and how did you adjust?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's a very great question. Right, with the cannabis plant, it's a different biology. It's a different genetic makeup than any of the plants that we were used to growing. Previously, it was leafy greens, herbs, and other, right? And we would design systems that were catch-alls that could grow everything instead of focused on one thing. And that was kind of our niche, right? We said, if you want a tilapia salad, there's a lot of aquaponic companies you can go visit that you can grow that. We want to have something that gives you a diversified offering of crops. So from the very beginning, that's what we set out to build. And that's why we went with grow media-based systems. When we switched to the cannabis plant, one of the biggest design challenges was how tall it grows compared to some of the other crops. So with a bell siphon based system, you have to have, or most typically you don't have to your point, Marty, but your drain pipes are underneath your beds, right? And on large commercial builds where you have 20 and 30 rows of beds, you have to have some fall in that drain pipe to get back to your sump tank if you're going to run everything off of one pump, which is how we define an aquaponic system, right? It runs off of one pump, or it's multiple systems.
Yeah, 1 inch and 8 feet, you gotta drop 1 inch.
Yeah, exactly. So when you start doing the math on that, inevitably you're having to bury sump tanks. So by implementing this new design, we were able to lower the height of our beds from waist high to knee high, which allows the big majority of the work done on the plant to be done, you know, in somebody's working area rather than having to climb or to reach. Additionally, it provides us the opportunity in certain areas to go multiple levels and actually use our racking systems to design vertical solutions with media-based systems. So the big obstacles ended up turning into opportunities for us. And then understanding, you know, the flowering cycle of the plant compared to the veg cycle, not just the lighting differences, but the nutrient differences, and trying to figure out how we can tailor our feeding rates and our feed inputs to get what we need to maximize the growth for whatever crop we're growing or for whatever stage that plant is in. So those were some of the biggest challenges, right? We went from a catch-all system that could grow anything to trying to design a system that was very specific to produce one crop.
Yeah, I'm glad you're saying that, because I'm currently building a system here in Carolina for hemp for indoor like that. And that's one of the, they built before I said, don't build the indoor grow room till I get there. And they built it and the ceiling's too short, you know? And I said, okay, what are we going to do? We can't have beds 4 feet tall and then try to grow up and have 4 feet to grow in. So I'm really glad you're on the show tonight. And, you know, we get to talk about this, and I'm going to have to look into what you're doing, because the guy's got concrete and got a ceiling now in there. So we're limited. And I've been thinking, how do I get the beds? Well, of course, I know I can bury a sump out the side of the building. So, and then we have to build a little thing to protect it and climate control it. But anyway, I just wanted to pass it along. Is there anywhere that we can go to look at what you're talking about? Or have you implemented it to the point where you've got any pictures or sharing that anywhere?
Yeah, you bet. We hadn't quite got to the point where we're sharing pictures. But I'm happy to give you guys a tour, and that goes to anybody on here. If y'all want to make a trip to Oklahoma, I'd personally take you around and show you our different operations, from our large bell siphon operation at Eastern Oklahoma State College to the high-tech operation that we're building just a few miles down the road.
Cool. That'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd be back to Oklahoma here in a few weeks.
What about maybe coming back online and doing a tour? Out of curiosity,
yeah. Mike, I was going to say,
for those of us that are in Washington State.
Yeah, and I live on the southern east coast, so yeah, I'd be, and I'm legally blind, so I can't exactly drive to Oklahoma either. So, you know,
I understand that, and hopefully I can help paint a picture with my words what you're not able to see physically. But
well, I'm a hydroponic guy, so really the lowering it down and running the plumbing different and then looking into what you're talking about, I'm pretty sure we can figure it out. But I'm glad you're on here saying we're doing this, and we're doing this for this reason, because that's something I've been kicking around having a problem with, helping this guy design this place, you know. So I'm glad to hear somebody else thinks it's feasible anyway.
Yeah, and that's the point of these conversations, right? We've been head down, working, grinding, designing, engineering, building systems, putting money from those systems back into learning how to build better systems. It's an obsession more than it is anything. And we're happy to share that obsession. And if we figured something out, man, we like to share that, because there's 500 things that each one of you have figured out that can save us a bunch of time. And at the end of the day, we're all in the industry together and figuring out how to propel it to more mainstream. And I think with cannabis is the way that aquaponics will go mainstream. That's my personal belief, and it's really our goal to integrate it appropriately.
After the show, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about cannabis. We would like to have your presence there, so that you can teach people and show people.
Hey, rather than about that, JR.
Cannabis is a social media platform for cannabis and cannabis related products. We're just kind of tired of Instagram and Facebook, corporate social media, deleting our accounts while we're trying to build our brands in this industry. So cannabis is downloadable on your phone. We also have a website at cannabis.app, and it's in your Google Play Store or your Apple Store, whichever one of them stores are. Anyways, but yeah, I'd really love for people to be able to kind of go along with you in this journey as you kind of bring these systems online and show people the cutting edge of how cannabis is being produced nowadays.
JR, you're leaving some important parts out of this cannabis. It is an awesome free social media platform built and for cannabis people, only for cannabis people, by cannabis people. And you're not going to ever get posts taken down or shut down. And you can link your Instagram and YouTube accounts and all your other stuff there. So it could be like your little bulletin board. So there. I'm a commercial for you, Jer.
I think the one thing that I think I brought up when you were on the show last time when you introduced Cannabuzz was the fact that it's not PC friendly, though, is it? Because you brought up the phone and the app. But see, I had that same problem with Instagram, where it took me forever till I found an app that I could download that allows me now to post and share with people on Instagram where I didn't have it before. Have you made any headway on that?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Use your computer. You can post on your computer through the app.
That's what I didn't join before, because I know when JR was on the show, he thought it was much like Instagram. You had to have the vertical picture. And now Instagram's actually updated where you can put your horizontal pictures. Your landscape, it doesn't have to be a vertical. It can be a horizontal picture now, so that makes life a lot easier. But that's what I'd asked you before, JR. So I'll get over there and make sure after the show I go and join myself and start sharing stuff over there, buddy.
Thanks. I appreciate that. Appreciate it.
And everybody needs to hook up on there and link up and make sure you share that out.
Yeah, I think it's great. To your point, we try to share stuff about our industrial hemp class that I teach at the college. Right. This is a state-sanctioned college participating in an Oklahoma industrial hemp pilot program that is legal in the federal farm bill. And they still tear stuff down, right? I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we will definitely check that out and hopefully be able to help spread the word. And if you want to get a presence on there, we can get that arranged and do what we can to help eliminate the misinformation. I know that's what a big part of this podcast is about, and that's why I'm thrilled to be here. And I'm having a blast, man. It's my first one ever.
Cool. Good. I'm glad you like it. It's a lot of fun. I finally got a space, man. I never had like a zone in the house because I have, you know, a wife and kids and stuff. And I got myself this little Harry Potter under the stairs kind of zone. So I'm really excited.
Well,
about
dude, it.
It
doesn't look like it. It looks like you dressed it up well, dude. You did a man cave. I love it. You did. Good job. Thumbs
Thanks.
Up.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
For those of you guys that don't know, I think JR.
What you guys got it going on?
I think JR was our very first guest, if memory serves me right. Marty.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
Really?
Was that 2 years ago? Has it been 2 years?
That was 4 years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
We've been on for over 3 years and change now. It was 3 years in February, I think it was.
Wow, that's amazing. Congratulations. You get killer guests too, Steve. You do a great job getting guests.
Yeah, you do, Steve.
It makes it a lot of fun to be on the panel with all the, you know, getting to talk with these professors and PhDs that you wouldn't get a word in edgewise at college. But
yes,
sit here and pick them apart a little bit here, and you get so much information out of them then, because they weren't necessarily expecting to talk about it. But then, wow, there you go, you know.
Well, you know what? I think this calls for a dab to you, Steve, for all these awesome guests and bringing all of us people together tonight. And cheers to all the chat and everybody. Thanks for hanging in there tonight. And make sure you throw Steve that thumbs up and show your love. Cheers.
Cheers, everybody.
Thanks, Tara.
So, Caitlin, have you tried any dual root zone planting compared to what you guys were doing with methodology at all?
Man, I have. We've experimented with it a little bit. Some mixed results. It's probably just because I don't know enough about it. So I'm happy to have you guys educate me. It sounded like Roger did a little bit of it, and I know you do a little bit of it. So do you start your seeds in soil and then into like a 1 gallon or a 3 gallon pot and then move them into the grow media beds? Is that on the premise behind it?
Yeah, so I start all my seeds in a separate system. I don't like to use the aquaponics water just because you'll actually lose some seeds to the microbes that live inside the system that way. At least I found that we've ended up with about 68% to 74% germination rate within the aquaponics system versus 98%+ with in a normal sterile water. Not sterile, but a little bit of labs, maybe a little bit of spirulina. Spirulina is really nice for seed startlings. For seed starts, because when you put it on the plugs, it actually helps prevent that algae growth at the beginning. It gives a little bit of extra nutrient as well. So I'm a big fan of that. And then we'll germinate those in the plugs. And then once those are germinated, we'll transplant them into fertipots or some other similar smaller pot. And then we'll transplant those into larger dual root zone pots so that we can maintain the nutrients a little bit easier.
Well, we're on this question. Since you said dual root zone pots, I know that you hand make most of your dual root zone pots, right? So are you using 7 gallon pots?
Yes, we use either 5 or 7 gallon. We use 7 gallons for moms and 5 gallons for main production.
Okay.
Because
they allow the water to go through? Poking through them, or how does it end up working out?
I use good quality black nursery pots myself. And just to get it in, well, before I pass on, I start everything in Rockwell because it started out as a hydroponic grower. I learned from a guy from South Africa that did all of South Africa and Kenya, built all the farms, fixed all the farms, kind of like Steve in South Africa, the guy that put out the fires, when you had a problem, and the state tells you everything you have to grow in South Africa. So I learned from him, did hydroponics before I met Steve and Marty, and that's what's got me into the dual root zone aquaponics. And I just have an understanding of it because it's basically a hydroponic system with using the fish water, and then you have the dual root zone part, where you add the soil on the living soil or whatever kind of soil. Marty uses living soil. Some people don't. There's all kinds of different media you can use, in your dual root zone part of it. But I pass on there. Yeah.
I've actually done it a number of different ways, like just because, again, I don't really have to worry about scale. And for me, it's mostly just experimenting with my own medicine. So there's not a whole lot that can go wrong, but obviously some does. But I've started seeds right in media beds. And I've grown in media beds with great success. The only thing I would say about media beds is that, or just media beds in hydroton, for instance, without a dual root zone, is that I found I had to supplement a lot more often. So as opposed to like say in a dual root zone situation where I can top dress two, maybe three times in flower. So that, you know, that's over a 2 month period. You know, I was feeding teas more like 2 to 3 times a week. And so that was just a lot more labor. There's a couple other things that came to it. Like the plants have a better root structure in a dual root zone pot. They get a little more firm. The hydrogen can be a little bit loose. And especially if you want to do training, for instance, you want to do a scrog net. So you spread them out. What happens in media beds is because there's not enough resistance in the media itself, that rather than the plant being trained over like this, once you bend it over, it leans its stalk like this. And it doesn't have the same effect on the plant growth that you want to have in order to get a nice full scrog net. So, and then the same thing in an outdoor situation, it doesn't have the same type of stability for the wind. So it can get blown over and you know, back and forth and probably cause some stress. So I would say that's another thing about the dual root zone that that is an advantage in both indoors and outdoor growing that maybe gets overlooked because we do focus on the nutrients a lot, especially on this show. Steve's obviously a big proponent of it. And so we talk about that part a lot, but just the practicality, I think, is a little bit of a trade-off because media beds are great because you can just throw plants in and it doesn't take very long and you're kind of done. And if you do a dual root zone pot, you have to make sure it's set right and has the right mix of media. And so initially it's more work for each plant, but then it's way less work for the rest of your grow because you can just feed your dry amendments or teas much less often throughout flower or even in veg. So for me, I've started plants right in the media beds and eventually moved the moms into dual root zone pots. I've actually started plants right in the dual root zone pots, and I do it a little bit differently than Steve does in that I leave my dual root zone pots in place. So essentially I'm just cutting the base of the stem out, pulling that out, leaving the root ball there and replanting right on top of it. I usually take off about, you know, I like to leave room to be able to top dress. So I like to have about 2 or 3 inches. So I'll take the top layer off and then take the stalk right there at the base and then replant on top of that with my next fresh run of amendments, which for me is usually just homemade castings and different fruit ferments that I've fed to my worms. So there's a number of different ways that I've done it, but there are advantages just mechanically to a dual root zone pot on top of all the stuff that Steve preaches about all the time, which is like the ability to change your dominance of your root zone by making it fungally dominant. It's what you know, cannabis prefers in flowering, just like other, you know, flowering products or fruiting products. A more fungal dominant soil, it produces better. And if you want more info on that, you can check out the episode with Chris Trump. He went really in depth on and showed and walked around his farm and showed us some examples of it, and it was really cool. So
you're talking about the last show with Chris Trump.
I think it was not the last show, but I think it was the one before that. But I'm not sure. I don't make every episode, unfortunately.
I think it was the last one, Marty, because he got cut off, and then we were getting ready to quit, go off on the post show. And he called us back. Me and Steve were getting ready to hang up and go to bed. Or Steve was going to bed. He was working his butt out there.
Yeah.
Out there. But all of a sudden, Chris popped back in and talked to us for an hour, walking around out on his farm.
That's great.
So I mean, anyway,
I was talking about that stuff anyway, you know, the dual root zone. And then you have the gas exchange, which the only person I've ever heard talk about that is Steve. And that's the gas exchange that you get through the dual root zone, increasing the environmental conditions for fungal growth. So if you get your dual root zone pot set up correctly so that the water comes up high enough to create a seal, so it becomes like an air bladder, and then drains back out without touching the soil at the top, that's where you need to be for a dual root zone to be completely productive for you. Because you want it to come all the way up to the point where it is creating an air seal and pushing air up through your dual root zone soil layer. So the best way that I can explain that is like, if you think of a normal pot, you know, usually on the side of a nursery pot, there, you know, little holes about that far up. So if your holes are that far up the side of your pot, you've got to get all the way up above that to create the air seal that will push air up through. So I usually recommend even a bigger
media zone than what Steve recommends and thinking them a little bit deeper. So that's how I do them, slightly different. So I have more like probably half of a, let's say, 5-gallon nursery pot. The bottom is filled with media. And I have a separator, and then I have the top as my soil mixture. And then I sink the pot down in low enough so that the water comes up into the media, but not up into the soil. And that's at its highest point, then it drains back out. So you get that air exchange constantly. And so those are all the highlights of the dual root zone. And I'm sure Steve will now talk about all the stuff I did.
So do you not use burlap anymore to hold your soil?
Yeah.
So I do have some that don't have any. And the reason that is that I've transplanted plants in that already had a good size root ball. So I started them in media beds, and they were, so the root ball itself essentially created a space to where I could put stuff on top of it. So there's really just such a large amount of media. And then on top of that was already the plant root ball. So it becomes more the restrictor than anything else. So that's an advantage to starting your plants sooner in a media bed, letting them getting taller before transplanting them. But that's honestly only an issue on your first run if you do it the way I do it, because after that you already have a root ball there that is your separator from the plant before it. So
well, wouldn't you also have your burlap? The original burlap would still be there too, but the roots have grown through it. So
that's right.
Well, the old dead root ball are not so much dead, but it's not dry. It wicks up the extra, so that it doesn't really get a chance to go into the lower part, into the media for the fish, right? And also, aren't you using a timer? Because if you're talking about air flow up and down, up like an ebb and flow, true. Are you using a timer to shut it on and off throughout the day, or are you running water straight through the entire time the lights are on?
So I'm doing water full time, and I use external U siphons to keep the water constantly cycling. And then obviously I'm always adding red worms almost constantly. So my systems are almost overpopulated to a point with red worms, especially in that soil zone. Because as soon as that plant gets cut and harvested and has died off completely, those roots will just start becoming food for the worms, and they just plow through it. And so I've done that, let's see, it's going to be my fifth run coming up here once I get set up here and doing it that way. So that's how I've done it. So if they have burlap, they still have burlap. If they didn't have burlap to start with, they don't have it now. And I definitely don't pull them out to put them in. Once you have your first run done and your root ball established, it really is plenty of a separator to keep it up out of the hydrogen. And especially if you're not playing it close. You know, if your soil level is really close to where your water zone, the top of your water is, then, you know, there's going to be less room for air. So that's why I usually, air on the side of more media in the bottom of my pot. And if I have to, just maybe top dress one or two more times.
So you're basically almost running a mini no-till soil, live soil grow in your top zone.
I guess you could look at it like a no-till. Like a no-till SIP
method.
In an aquaponic system. So a SIP, sipping from an aquaponic system.
And it's an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Yeah. It's just that you're not disturbing the fungi and all that you've created in there, all the microbes and fungi, by not ripping the whole root ball out and stuff like that. So
right, and then I'm also in the media beds around all of my dual root zone pots. I have lettuce and kale and green onions and mint and.
Oh, I have a question. Okay, yeah. So brassicas inhibit mycorrhizal growth nearby. That's one of the things that I really
don't know what a brassica is.
Okay, so.
Please elaborate.
Cabbage, broccoli, kale, broccolini, cauliflower. What else am I forgetting?
I don't know. It sounds like plenty.
But so all of those, they actually will inhibit mycorrhizal growth. They're one of the few plants that does not need mycorrhizae. and actually release a chemical that actually inhibits mycorrhizal growth in the nearby root system. They are one of the few things you should never companion plant with cannabis.
Don't grow those next to your cannabis is what he said.
Yeah, never, ever, ever grow those near cannabis. You should grow purslane, grasses, clovers, thyme, oregano, creeping lavender. What were you saying?
The nitrifying plants that are going to put nitrogen back into the system?
No, not even nitrifying plants. Plants that will host a wide variety of everything I just mentioned will host at least a dozen different species of mycorrhizal fungi, which will break down and mineralize nutrients in different ways. We know that, purslane. Purslane actually will host over 24 different species of mycorrhizal fungi and mineralize a ludicrously large range of minerals compared to other plants. It's also very good on a salad. So you can absolutely grow salad greens and microgreens and small leaf greens below your cannabis plants, even in a commercial operation for sale for commercial production, for people. Because remember, if you're doing everything to cannabis specification, which has to be smoked and everything else, it more than meets the edible specification of people's sandwiches. I mean, you're quadruple what they require already. So you know that there's no issues with food safety.
You mean there's no seed to sale tracking on lettuce? What? Shocked.
And maybe there should be, and we wouldn't have these massive E. coli recalls from the fields out in, right?
Oh, I love when the veggie guys criticize us, and it's just like, dude, that's cute and all when you guys, like, I have this sometimes when I speak at different, in particular aquaponics conferences, not the Aquaponics Association conference, but other meetings with aquaponics people, and they kind of poo-poo on the cannabis guys, and it's like, that's really cool that you guys poo-poo on us, but remember, we're testing literally every single metric that we could possibly test in our entire grow because it matters financially, and we have the money to do it. And we also are testing all the essential oil output of all of our plants, which is something they are not doing for lettuce, tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, and all the rest of the stuff that everyone else likes to grow. So we have more metric data on essential oil output, which would absolutely relate to flavonoids in the case of regular vegetables, how you could translate similar, that data than anyone else. That's why it's kind of almost goofy sometimes when you get some of the criticism from the vegetable guys on the cannabis industry. It's like, that's really cute and all, but we have 10 times the metrics, even from a single run, than half these guys have for 5 years, And I'm sure you have the same thing with your grows.
So in Oklahoma, what kind of restrictions do you have on bringing in new cultivars or getting new varieties in?
Restrictions?
That's
the answer. What's a restriction?
Oh, yes. Beautiful.
It's the Wild West, like they said. Everything pretty much, if you're in compliance, everything goes. Anything goes in Oklahoma.
Yeah, so in Oklahoma, there is no legal way to... They may have cleaned it up with the Uni Bill. I don't know completely, so I might be...
Not currently, no.
Yeah, there is no legal way to buy seeds or clones, but once you possess them, it's fully legal for you to have them. So I always tell people the magic weed fairy came.
Yep. These paper planes, they float in the air, and sometimes they crash in the parking lot.
Yeah, so it's that ridiculous, right? I mean, and they didn't, it's, so other than that, there aren't any restrictions, right? And a big deal and a big thing that I see coming with the cannabis industry, especially with the legalization of industrial hemp from a federal standpoint, is I really fear that high quality cannabis grown for CBD and for THC is going to get pushed indoors just due to the fact that industrial hemp will be commoditized. It'll be a commodity, and farmers will be able to grow it just like they grow wheat or corn or soy, and they're going to be farming the male version of the plant, and cross-pollination, I think, is going to become a massive issue. And from a legal standpoint, I actually see some contracts coming up here in the future that would be cannabis related, that would ensure that the farmers around you don't grow a male crop that could cross-pollinate your female crop. And I see some financial incentives for people to capitalize on that. So I think it's going to be very interesting to see how federal legalization of industrial hemp affects outdoor medicinal marijuana or high THC adult use cannabis production. But I don't think in 15 years it'll be negligible.
Well, we also know here in the Southeast, real quickly, in the Southeast, it's a commodity already. It's not under medical or anything like that as it is in the West. In the Southeast, you buy much less, like $250 and a couple pages, and you're a hemp grower. And now then, whether you grow indoors, if you grow outdoors, you're going to have tainted plants. So we have a successful friend in North Carolina that is, you know, getting $2,000 a pound last time he was on the show for high quality medical hemp indoors in a climate controlled environment. And Steve, I think you wanted to say something.
I was going to say something about Popcorn Sutton. I mean, he went through all those phases of prohibition and then legalization and then commercialization. And throughout that whole time, when he wasn't in prison, he was making high quality moonshine, and he had a name and he had a brand, and people paid for that. Yeah, you can go get a gallon of Everclear for whatever, $12 or $13, I don't know, whatever. But I mean, if you wanted something that came from him and his craft, then you had to pay more.
You bet. And I think that cannabis is more likened to alcohol than it is a commodity good, especially the high CBD and high THC varieties, right? The stuff grown for fiber, the stuff grown for feed inputs for animals, the stuff grown for animal bedding, the stuff grown for bioplastics, all that stuff, sure, right? It's going to be an acreage deal. It's going to be a cut it, bale it, and ship it to the processor. But to your point, like the alcohol industry, anybody can go buy a Bud Light. But if you want a nice craft beer from someone that puts time and effort and care into brewing that beer, that you can go see and talk to, that can explain the science with a passion like Steve can, or the marketing passion like Roger can, or the home grower side of things like Marty. You know, that's where niches get created, and that's how people that do things right should make more money than everybody else. We've always been a firm believer that the best way to make money is by doing good. Right. That's the whole premise behind our company, was if we go out and lead by example, if we conserve natural resources, if we create jobs, if we create opportunity, we're going to attract talent. And by attracting that talent, that's how I'm on this podcast. Right. I can't set all this stuff up, but the smart guy sitting across from me sure did. And
so, grow good. Look at that shirt. Prime example. Look at that. You can't see it. I love it. Awesome.
It's grow good. And it's not. We know that it's either grammatically correct or grammatically incorrect, depending on how you interpret it. But it's get out there and grow good. It's get out there and grow good. You know, it's however you want to interpret it. And that's the basis of the community. And I think that if we can all get behind that simple concept, then we're all going to be better off for it. And that's really what we try to focus for and strive. We try to lead by example. We try to share our technology. We try to talk about it. We try to show people. You know, the very first time we went to an Aquaponic Association conference, there's a guy that has a camera and he's literally videotaping our systems, you know, and then they get commercially ripped off by a large greenhouse manufacturer about 6 months later. So that's passion. That's what drives us. It's being innovative. It's creating. And we hope that we continue to do that. And then we hope to learn what you all are doing to make stuff look like that, because that looks tasty.
That's what I love about your company concept. Is basically, everybody on the panel does the same thing. We have the canna interest, but we're all into food and making that better. And with, you know, regardless, because we even go beyond aquaponics. I'm doing Hugel beds also. Yep. You know, and stuff like that, because I want to learn more and more about it. Because I think if you have a space, doesn't mean you have to build a machine to grow. You know, if you can find out a different way to grow out there and still be organic and have a healthy crop and be doing good for the environment, it's the same thing. But in any greenhouse that I have that grows hemp or anything, I'll also have vegetables in there. you know. And I thank you for the tip on brassicas there, Steve. I would definitely keep that mode. I think that's more in aquaponics where it's going to be sharing that water. But yeah, probably not a good idea to have that necessarily around you. And in closing, real quickly, because y'all know I'm in the Southeast, and since Marty picked on me earlier, he failed to mention that, you know, he picked on me about produce, but see, up until recently, the only thing I could grow legally was produce. And now
I can grow hemp.
But I can't grow THC cannabis here. So, but I can now grow hemp, and I'm so excited about it. So, and now, all right, I'm shut up again.
Hey, you should check your Facebook message. I sent you something.
You sent me something?
I did.
Okay. I thought I saw, well, today.
Yeah, just when we were on the show earlier. I sent you the 3D model of my flower room I've been working on.
Oh, cool, man. Cool. Oh, shit. I can't wait. Thank you, Marty.
Yeah, I know you were talking about dealing with challenges on height, and I'm indoors on a garage with a cement floor, so bearing is something isn't exactly an option. So
yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, and I pass on again. I just wanted to make that comment. Thanks, Marty.
Yeah, no problem. And then I just wanted to throw that picture up so you guys could see that dual read zone kind of in practice. So hopefully that came through. You guys could see it all right.
Yeah, that was sweet, man. Very educational. I get the concept behind it. It makes a lot of sense. I'm not going to tell you guys how I was doing it, because I'll just get made fun of. But
I guarantee you, however you did it, we probably messed with something equally as, you know, questionable. Well, maybe it worked, but it's effectiveness. There's a number of things I've done that I haven't done again for good reason. So
exactly. And I love the space that you guys have created here. The fact that it's pro cannabis, yeah. But more importantly, it's pro aquaponics. It's pro conservation. It's pro local food, you know, and that's why we got into this industry. We really see cannabis as an ends to helping us do what we wanted to do the entire time. And if we can grow something that's worth 100 times more than what we grew beforehand, maybe we can give away more tomato starter plants and positively affect our community by doing that. And that is also gorgeous.
Well, I got tired of growing peppers for Whole Foods and selling them for like $2.99 a pound. And they were selling them for $6.99 a pound. And then they wanted me to do it cheaper. You know, so that's the thing that, because I'm a USD certified grower and in produce and I grew for Whole Foods. So, and Joshua did that too. Josh hadn't been on the show in a while, but Josh does that stuff too. But the thing is, it got kind of sick, but then I didn't have any choice though. You just keep having to find a niche. If you want to farm and make a little bit of money, all I ever did was basically pay for my farm to run. I never made any money in produce. I just, because it's not big enough. You come in, you think, oh, I'm going to make this money. I got this great grow and this super, I got this nice greenhouse and everything. And then all you end up doing is paying yourself back for the money you spent at the beginning of the year to get started. But that was good enough for me to still be to achieve that. Now with the hemp products and the products of the secondary products that you can, you know, the value added products, as they would say in the business, you will be able to make some money, maybe. You know, I'm really excited about having a hemp grow this coming year. In fact, I'm going to try to start and go through the winter and see what I can do about my heat control this first year, you know, because we just got our license. I'm just being licensed. In fact, we talked about it last week. I'm going through my paperwork. The farm already has a license, but in Carolina, they allow you to have different locations. So you can have a nursery one place, an outdoor farm another place, a greenhouse operation here or whatever, and they're umbrellaing me under their license, and I'm currently going through that paperwork to get that done right now. So I'm excited, you know, I'm beaming, and to have you on tonight with your different ideas. And besides, and also, we don't make fun of people, man. No matter how you seem to be a successful guy, so whatever you did was not wrong. And that's how you teach too. You go through phases and you do different things, and you may fail or you may succeed, but not on the level that you want to succeed. So you experiment and find something new. So don't, it's like, there's no bad questions. There's no stupid questions, and there's no bad way to grow if you completed a process, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah, you're completely right. I mean, the design process and the creative process is just that. When we first started out, we were going down to Tractor Supply and we were buying feed troughs and stock tanks. And I will say, Marty, at all of our bids, they are a no hydrotin zone. Okay, we refuse to use hydrotin for a multitude of reasons. Number one, it's rounded. So in an ebb and flow system, it pulls your seeds down. Number two, it floats. So in an ebb and flow system, it disturbs your root structures. Number three, it's manufactured in Germany, shipped to Canada, shipped to California, and then distributed. So to fill up one of our media beds, it's astronomically too expensive, which I think is one of the main reasons why the media-based industry hadn't scaled. We're fortunate enough to live in Oklahoma, and all around us, we have Oklahoma red dirt. And you bake Oklahoma red dirt in a kiln like a brick, and you get some pretty damn good grow media. So we manufacture all of our own grow media. That cut the cost for us tremendously.
Oh, yeah. Especially, it's really expensive.
Yeah, I mean, it's outrageously expensive because you're paying for it to be manufactured in Germany and put on a boat to Canada and shipped to your local hydroponic store, right? It's a horribly inefficient process.
And see, I'm a big, hydroton's my favorite media, but I understand everything you're saying. And they also make it in a flat style now, too. They make it in
that's what we do, too. So we manufacture it more oblong. So that way it creates more of a soil-like environment. And you get some of the benefits that you would get from the compaction rates of soil without having it nice and rounded like the hydroton is. And we always talk about biological surface area in aquaponics, right? The more oblong you get, the more you can get compacted, the better off you're going to be. The big issue that we had was that the fish waste would build up in the media beds. And when we tried to run our hands through it, it turned into concrete. So that's when we started pairing mechanical bead filtration, stripping out all of our solids before they get introduced into our grow beds. Then we use our backwash to water our soil-based plants. We close that nutrient cycle, and we create an output good off of our waste from our system.
Are you using a kiln to do your clay? Because I live in the South. We got tons of red clay.
Yeah, so it's ran through a kiln and then an extruder to push it at different sizes and then through screens to separate it to get it to the sizes that we want. Too big doesn't germinate well enough. Too small is too dadgum heavy to move. So we think we found the sweet spot. After that, we partnered with a company that designs and engineers wire racking and industrial shelving. We were the first equipment manufacturer they ever worked with because they supported our social mission. We designed and engineered our own grow beds that fit within those racking systems. And that's how we got to the modular scalable systems that we have now.
That's pretty interesting because I was advised, I've been constantly always building systems and designing stuff. And I hate to say it because every time I say something, somebody comes up with something, but I'm trying to do a system. Let's just say vaguely, I'm trying to design this system right now. And what I found is something you just said that at touch base for everybody out there. This is really important. You don't always have to design it from the ground up. There's a lot of products out there that might just need a modification. And if you get in touch with the company that does the molding on the plastic or the PVC, you can possibly get them to build I can't think of what it's called. It's basically your mold. It's a mold, but it's not called a mold, a cast or a mold or whatever. And then you can have them introduce something like where you could hook it up to plumbing or something. So, keep that in mind. If you're out there trying to, on a scale, trying to build your own kind of systems, there are ways to take things that are already out there and modify them. If you could get, you're going to have to buy some. You're going to have some money to buy for you, but you can get some of these companies to make a new injection mold or whatever,
Shameless company plug, right? Since we've built so many systems and we've been fortunate enough to do so, we have industrial and commercial level supply chains established. So I don't go to Lowe's and I don't go to supply, right? I order every piece of PVC direct from the manufacturer, and on items like inch and a half bulkheads, on inch and a half ball valves, on float valves, the things that are going to cost your normal individual $25 to $30 a pop, we're getting into them at $5 and $10 a pop, and we're able to pass those savings on to other people that need those specific components. So not only that, we rotationally mold our own plastics. We can get any size reservoir, tank, conical bottom, flat bottom, variable, non-variable. We designed the only aquaponic grow bed that was specifically for aquaponics that's on the market, and any of the parts and components can easily integrate into what you're doing. So before you go down to Lowe's or Home Depot or plumbing supply store and drop a few bills on your PVC needs, man, reach out to us first, because probably with one email in 2 days, I can have what you need sitting on your front porch.
Oh, that's awesome. And that's why we do that on this show. I mean, Steve's always up, welcome opening, plugging. You know, there's no such thing as shameless self-promotion here. You know, we all
self-promote. You said that was for PVC?
You bet. PVC, industrial shelving, industrial plastics, all NSF approved, food grade, food safe. Built
all throughout. So do you ship throughout the United States?
You bet. We got systems in 10 different states. We've got retail distributor out in California. We just incorporated out in California. So
do you have anything in Washington yet?
In Washington State.
Or Oregon.
We have one in Oregon.
Oregon.
Oregon is at, you're putting AYA, Alternative Youth Academy. They're a great nonprofit. It's something Bay in Portland. And it's way north of Portland in Oregon. Man, now I'm looking like an idiot.
Salem or Eugene.
Hey, I think you remembered a lot from off the top of your head.
His name is Scott. He's a great guy. He does great work up there. I'm going to definitely figure out. It's AYA, Alternative Youth Academy. I'm almost positive. So I'm going to report back on that, because he was the first people to buy a system. Well, I mean, we really had to figure out how are we going to ship these things from Oklahoma to about as far away in the continuous United States as we can. So he was a great person to work with us and work through some of those hiccups. And without people like that, we're not able to move systems like we've been able to move, because a lot of the things that we've been trying to do just haven't been figured out before. So figuring out how to efficiently ship and package, you know, 40 square foot aquaponic systems and get them out has been more of a hassle than what I'd like to admit, but the modular installable systems and components really help. And I don't know if this is Marty, but he is really good at distracting me.
I'm just showing off, that's all.
I don't like it. If I would have known, I had Wyatt, I knew some slides popped open. I showed you guys some of our commercial grows and builds. And if anybody wants to see any of our builds, any of the stuff we've been working on, they can feel free to email me. Kaben, K-A-B-E-N, at Symbiotic, S-Y-M-B-I-O-T-I-C, Aquaponic, AQUAPONIC.com.
No S, not Aquaponic.
People say aquaponic system, and I don't get that, right? It's a single system, so it should be an aquaponic. People always say you're symbiotic aquaponics, and I'm like, I don't know what that is.
Yeah. That's too many. That's too much.
I'm only one.
Well, so everybody out there wants to know, since you brought up you can do that, you got people in Oregon. What about people in the Southeast or on the eastern side of the, you know?
So we've got partnerships with Delaware Valley University. And I see now you're all putting me on the daggum spot. Delaware Valley.
It's okay. We love you anyway.
Yeah, thank you. It is in Pennsylvania. That's where it is. We've got partnerships at UC Davis out in California, Eastern Oklahoma State College, Redlands Community College, University of Nebraska at Kearney, Tarrant County Community College in Arlington. Somebody's going to get mad because I'm going to forget them. But we're currently working on a research partnership with Langston, which is an aquaculture school here in Oklahoma.
Cool.
So after we check that box, we will be in educational facilities from kindergartens all the way up through graduate level college programs.
When you say that you guys are manufacturing your own media, your clay medium, have you done any microbial testing to see how those interactions are with the medium itself?
Yeah, so somebody earlier was talking about silica and then silicate, and I can't remember who it was about needing to amend that, but we actually are high in that. So with some of the new regulations that are coming down, limiting the ability for cannabis purchasers to to get silica products. We've got that essentially built in to what we're growing with. Additionally, all of the compositions and inputs and manufacturing processes were submitted to Oregon Tilth, our third-party certifying agent, and it is a USDA-approved organic input.
Very cool.
Oh, I think you might be on mute. Sorry.
So you have done testing with the microbial interactions with the medium itself?
You bet. So there's the cationic and anionic exchange rates and the microbial interactions. Man, I'd lie to you if I said I was a scientist. I'm more of the paper pusher and the sales guy. So I wouldn't want to get too far into making myself sound too dumb.
Hey, I appreciate that. Appreciate your honesty.
That's usually my specialty, but I'll share with you tonight.
There you go. Whatever. I'm happy to learn. I promise you that. Here's what I know is we had a guy that built systems for us, and he walked into a grow that we just built at a school in Oklahoma, and he had a Dr. Pepper. This is a water bottle, and he put the Dr. Pepper in the grow media and turned to the principal and said, come back after lunch, and there will be a six-pack growing there because these systems will grow anything, and I'm a firm believer in that.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, I like that scrog, man. That's really uniform. You've got some.
Yeah, this was all under an LED, like a low profile LED from Vivigrow, which they were very nice to send me and allow me to try it out, give them some feedback on it. And honestly, it was a great light. It's a little heavy on the red spectrum. So I think it's right about 600 watts covering this area right here. And it did extremely well. On the other side of this grow, I was doing a ceramic metal halide conversion lamps with a similar scrog setup. And
nice.
Pretty similar in terms of results, except for the LED was just everyone's preference. It was a little better in yield. I didn't get them lab tested, so I'm not as scientific as y'all, but in product testing amongst experts,
quality control.
it everybody preferred the LED. Not that there was any, I mean, plenty of people enjoyed the ceramic halide, including myself, but everybody that I sampled, including other growers, that have their own stuff, people that I consider connoisseurs, to get their feedback on it. And that's more the route that I take. Again, it's just mostly me and my six plants that I could grow at the time. So you're a little more limited when you have that kind of plant count. Sympathize. But yeah, this here is forum cut cookies on the left. And on the right is grape stomper. So yeah.
Have you found any genetics or any particular breeder that is responding more positively to the aquaponic environment, or any different cultivars or strains that just haven't worked for you?
I definitely haven't any that haven't worked for me. I do feel like some of them, because one of the things that I focus on, and it's mostly anecdotal again, based on my own experience and feedback that I get. And so what's nice about comparing notes with other growers that you respect and they even have similar growing styles, like Living Soil, for instance, is one of the ones that I love to compare to all the time, because in theory, it should come out pretty close to what aquaponics is, because you get the same microbial diversity. You basically just don't have, the nutrient and bacteria profile that you get from the fish, unless you're adding that, which most Living Soil growers aren't. They might be doing like a fish hydro slate or something like that. But for the most part, you're not getting the exposure to the bacteria that we breed, and we've linked those variations in microbiology to expression of different genes in the plants. So in theory, the more more diversity you have, the more genetic expression you're going to get. And that's been kind of my experience with aquaponics, and even compared to Living Soil, there are certain cuts that are the same cuts from the same
grower took the same clones that like these two right here. The one on the left is Forum Cut Cookies, like I talked about. And I've compared notes with various other growers on Forum Cut Cookies. It's very popular. Lots of people like to grow it. It's got a lot of bag appeal. And it's really popular and has been ever since it came out. And in my opinion, the aquaponics is, you know, significantly better than any other Forum Cut Cookies that I've ever had. I've also grown Forum Cut Cookies in a sub-irrigated planter with just living soil fed with aquaponics. And even that came out slightly different flavor and terpene profile. So I do feel like there's definitely something about being a part of the living system affecting the genetic expression of the plant. And there are probably certain variations in genetic profiles that you really need the microbial profile of fish or water systems, living aquatic water systems, whether that's red worms or shrimp or any of those different types of aquaponics that you want to run. My personal opinion is that you're going to see different genetic expression in some of those, and that's been my experience in both growing in multiple ways. I've had living soil beds just outdoors in my backyard. I've had an outdoor aquaponic system. You can check out my YouTube channel, AP Meds. So I'm at AP Meds on YouTube and Instagram and Patreon and probably some other ones that I'm forgetting right now. All of those are really just about growing different ways to try to get the best medicine for myself. So if you're looking at it from my perspective, which is both as a consumer and a grower and a patient, because I've been consuming it since before I was a patient. I really believe that. I even started later than a lot of people did, after high school. I think it was like 20 or 21, something like that. And but it's always been around. You grow up in Northern California, extreme Northern California. I'm talking Siskiyou County, Humboldt County. It's just around you. There's no way that you don't know anything about pot by the time you get to age 18. Like if you grow up there, you know some amount about it. Like it's just a matter of how much. And for me, I had half of my family was heavily involved in it. So got a lot of exposure and had access to a lot of different types of grows. My brother had numerous friends, and that was kind of the cool thing to do in high school in Humboldt County was to set up a grow room and, make a few thousand dollars and go buy a Toyota. That was the cool thing to do when you were a junior or senior in high school. You guys can laugh, but it's the truth. If you've ever been there, you know. Anyway, so I do think that I got really sidetracked there, but I do think that when you get down to it, there is a genetic expression that you get unlocked in certain strains. And I would say, Girl Scout Cookie is definitely one of them that I've been able to demonstrate a difference in. The other one I would say is probably Lemon OG, which has always been relatively, what I hear from lots of other growers is how picky it is or, it doesn't like a number of different, like especially in hydro. My friend that did hydro had a really hard time getting any type of yield or flavor or terpene profile out of it. It was some of my favorite smoke I've ever blazed. And it came out just really, super strong lemon flavor. So that would be another one that I would say that I've been able to demonstrate, at least to myself, if not to anyone else, in comparison to other people that have grown the same cut in different medias or I've grown it myself in different methods. And those are the three that I pretty much use all the time, which is aquaponics, living soil media beds, or not living soil raised beds. So essentially we're just raising the bed up above the soil, laying down a separator to keep the gophers out and growing through our living soil media bed all the way down into the good old earth, all the way to sub-irrigated planters and aquaponics. So those are the three primary ways that I've grown multiple cuts in. And I, like, if you gave me the option to have
you know, 10 pounds of one particular one just manifest in front of me, I would absolutely say aquaponics, regardless of what strain it was. I there was never a time in which I preferred any other method when growing comparatively the same cut. Does that make sense?
It does. And it was, although anecdotal, it was eloquent. And believe it or not, it makes me feel a whole lot better about the money that I just spent to build the facility in McAllister. So,
well, hey, that's the only thing I could do here. And then my job's done, right?
That's right. And I say I, that's a very self-centered word. It's a team, man. We've got a bunch of folks here in Oklahoma that are all grinding out, that are all working, system designers, engineers, marketing folks, PR folks, finance folks, lawyers, doctors. You know, we're fortunate to have that team around us. So there's a lot of people that are there to pick me up when we fall down, that's for sure. So that anecdotal evidence and experience, though, means as much to me as anything that's written in any scientific journal, because you've lived the life and you're a walking, living, breathing, dabbing billboard for aquaponic cannabis. So I have to say thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I would say similar is Steve. I don't know. He said he was going to the bathroom a long time ago. I don't know if he ever came back or not. He's been pretty quiet. But he will go on and on about extracts with aquaponics, which I personally, I'm what I refer to as a flower geek. So I have concentrates that have been given to me. And I do consume them. I even have I bought a fancy little pin here so I can consume concentrate. Yeah. And now I have
we all got one of them now, don't we?
No deal. So I can do concentrates in that. So but for
Tara. Yeah.
Steve is a big proponent of aquaponics in terms of for extracts, because of not only you know, higher resin yields, but you know, terpene profiles, purity, you know, all those different things. So I don't know.
That's what I was going to say. It was because it was cleaner and it didn't have any of the pathogens or anything like that. It's proven to be one of the cleanest ways to grow when you're testing, right? Isn't that what you're trying to get at, Marty?
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. It can be an issue if your state only does microbial testing. That can kind of become a problem, because you can, if they're only doing a count on microbial, like living organisms, then you could score a high count with organisms that are perfectly healthy and fine. So that was one of the issues that happened in Oregon, was that, and why they eventually suspended some of the testing until they could sort it out, and why they, part of the reason why they justified to transitioning to state certified labs, which is kind of another topic. But that was part of the, what they used to justify it, was saying, okay, well, we got to standardize these tests because we can't be failing naturally grown herb with really for no reason other than we're not going to identify the microbes that are showing up on our test. You know, they really needed to take it a step further and say, okay, well, what microbes are living here? You know, is this powdery mildew, you know, or is this, you know, lactobacillus, or, you know, some other random living microbe that is, you know, perfectly fine. So that was an issue that a number of organic growers ran into the first year of legalization, recreational legalization in Oregon. So that's one way that your microbial profile would probably hurt you, just in that you're breeding microbial life and sustaining it in order for your aquaponic system to exist and be successful. I'm sure that there's going to be living microbial life around. So whether that's because, you know, it comes from your hands or it comes from, you know, however it gets on the plant, if it's on there at all, and even just, you know, the only thing you test on the, you know, now it's 5 pound packs, but I guess 1 pound packs at the time, you know, they only tested like two or three little nugs. And even then they only take one sample of one bud. So there was some issues with testing in the beginning that I feel like have at least been ironed out now, but you guys might want to watch for in newer states where they're not, in the beginning, they don't understand what they're actually testing.
You know, that kind of takes us right back to that GAP certification again, because that's the kind of stuff that they test for. So again, it's, It's funny, you know, because we had such a broad-based show on aquaponics today, and it keeps coming back to us. Since Steve brought up GAP certification earlier in the show, this is the same exact thing that will be highly tested and be recognized if there's GAP certification across the board. So it's not a bad thing, but it's a little controversial. Again, it's expensive, but I'll let you go on. But I thought it was a good time to inject that exactly what you're talking about is what would be states with GAP certification. That's what you have to be able to identify what row in your greenhouse or on your farm and how many plant, what number plant it was and in what row it was and what field it was, you know, and on and on and on and on if it's GAP certified, because that's what GAP certification does. And it basically they started that out to bring that regulations into produce because they wanted to open up school districts, because school districts are having a hard time surviving paying what they're paying. So what they wanted to do was go direct from farmer to school districts. And that's where when I went to GAP certification at Furman University, that was sponsored by Clemson University. Well, Furman, of course, Furman Paladins, but go Tigers, Clemson Tigers and Clemson and the USDA and the South Carolina Department of Ag, the North Carolina Department of Ag, and all the surrounding states that border with the Carolinas were all there. And anybody that wanted to was interested, and it was real important to go to that. But sorry, I didn't mean to inject, but I thought what you just said was the exact same thing. When you guys started, if you're going to be in the future farmers in future states, and you're looking at the fact the state might introduce or decide that you can do it if you're GAP certified. And so you better look into what it takes to get GAP certified and think about that and your infrastructure and your logistics when you're building your grow. Because it requires, you know, like fencing and for, you know, there's all kind of insurance and stuff like that, which we all know without saying, I guess. And if you don't, you understand if you become a grower, you're going to have insurance, you know, because the state's going to make you have insurance to run your farm. I don't know. Is that true in Oklahoma, Caven? Do you have to, or I don't know if you know, Marty, as far as you've been involved with farms in Oregon and California, but maybe you can answer that question since it came up in my comment is, are all states required, are all farms that are doing any kind of commercial growing or whatever, or you're building commercial farms under these licenses, is there not liability and insurance that you have to have also?
Just as a business, you would want to have that. Yeah, I mean, that's just exactly. Like any business needs to have that. Come on, Roger.
No, that's not the point. I know what the answer is. I'm saying the reason I'm asking the question is because a lot of people out there listening don't know the answer to this question.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Come on. Everybody knows a business. Okay. Roger, come on. Business is business, whether you're in the cannabis industry, hemp, agriculture, retail. We all know the answer. Yeah. Come on, Roger. Yeah.
Well, I know people that are trying to do it with, they undercut. I'm just trying to say, don't undercut. Do it right.
That's the ones that are going legal, right? I mean, isn't that the whole point of this whole thing? Like getting legal, getting your law straight.
Yeah, I'm not here to debate whether or not we should have insurance. I'm just saying, for people out there listening to the show to be aware that you will have to do this because not everybody understands that.
Well, I'm sorry. Yeah. I just thought that was a pretty obvious thing if you're a business owner. Like you just, I had a hair salon and I had liability insurance. I mean, you just got to have that shit, you know?
I know. Yeah,
I think there's a difference between, you know, because you can talk about different types of insurance. Obviously, they don't require crop insurance, which you probably couldn't even get until very recently, if you can at all. And then
yeah, I couldn't even get crop insurance.
It, you know, is going to be required for pretty much anything. The only exception would be under the medical programs. There's a number of them, even the Oregon medical program. You don't have to be someone else's grower. You don't have to carry liability insurance.
Okay, so that's the question I was asking, was what did your state say that had to be? In my state, you have to have, now I don't know. I know in produce, I had to have a nice insurance policy, you know, for liability on my farm and all that, just to get my licenses and stuff like that, you know, to be.
Right, so for recreational.
Well, more to sell. Actually, the insurance comes on the side of when you want to sell. Not as much that you can't start a farm without it, but if you want to actually market to anybody besides a roadside farm, then like Tara said, yeah, and it is a business. And it is a business where you don't get days off either if you start a farm. But Yeah, that's what I was saying, is that what from state to state, I was asking Caven and Marty whether or not they were required to have insurance in their state, not that's about whether or not you should or if, whether it's a good or bad business practice.
Right.
That's what I was
doing. For recreational, it is required, but not for it to be someone else's medical grower. And so in Oregon, in the medical marijuana program, you can grow for up to 6 total people, assuming that you are on the proper zoning and regulation for your county and city. So it gets a little complicated, but essentially, assuming that you are basically, you're only legal to grow for yourself, in which case you get 6 plants, unless you have 2 people living at the address that both have cards.
Right.
So have to live on site, and then you can have 12. In certain places, you're capped at 6. So like, for instance, here in Southern Oregon, there's some residential areas that you can only grow 6 plants inside. And so that's all based off of your zoning with the county or the city.
Right.
So then once you get inside city limits, then you also have whatever regulations that they have. And most of them are indoors only, and you can't have you can grow from anybody besides yourself. But assuming that you're in the proper zoning, then you can do up to 6 growers, 6 plants each, which is a total of 48.
Oh yeah, but I was just a bit, yeah, okay. Again, I was just like, but you don't have to have, but you're, and again, you're talking about home and individual growing, and okay, so.
Right. So that's how you would not have liability insurance per se.
How is it in Oklahoma and other states you've worked in, Caven? And that's what I was asking. Do all the states require you in your hemp grows and cannabis grows? And or I mean, it sounds like you're on a scale where definitely Tara's point is exactly on point, that you'd have to have it. But I mean, I was saying not everybody knew. And yes. I just wanted to know what it was, the actual regulations in your state, because state to state, they may or may not require insurance, even though that might be stupid not to have it.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think that there is actually any requirement that a Oklahoma industrial hemp pilot participant have insurance. And I don't think that there's a requirement through the Oklahoma Medicinal Marijuana Authority for you to have insurance too. Tara's point, my law school professor, Ms. McDougal, actually, used to say that we all have liability rays shooting off of us every day. Yeah. And it's our job to dampen them, right? So, on the consulting side of things, when we do advise clients, it's always you want to have that insurance. Any reputable buyer, whether it's a vegetable buyer or whether it's going to be a processor, is going to want to have a guarantee that they have some protection on the backside in case the product that you sell them gets somebody sick, right? They want to be able to point that right back at you. So I think just as a practical matter, back to Tara's point, yeah, liability insurance is a good way to go for anybody that's going to be, I think a good way to look at it is if your product is entering back into the stream of commerce, right? Marty, with those caregivers and with people that are growing for somebody else, that's not product that is entering into the stream of commerce.
Right.
It's not going to the market. There's not going to be an interaction between buyers and sellers where you market exchange, right? That's somebody saying, hey, Marty, you know more about this than I do. You're going to grow mine for me. And Marty's saying, I'll do that for you, buddy, right? That's a little bit different.
Right.
There's probably Good Samaritan laws and all kinds of stuff that could protect you in that situation. But anytime that you're going to exchange your product for a dollar, I say have as much protection as you possibly can.
And that goes back to the point I said, it doesn't matter until you want to sell it.
You're right. You're 100%.
You do not have to have liability insurance until you, I mean, again, it's a good, because this liability insurance not only covers your point of sale, which, as Caven just said, is going to be required, you know, because no processor, and exactly what you said, that's exactly why in Whole Foods you had to have this policy, this insurance. It was a liability policy in order so that they would be covered. That wouldn't be their dime if you gave them tainted fruit that made somebody sick, exact words kind of thing. And going back to that, the liability coverage also helps you that if you have a farm and you're going to have people visiting your farm, if they trip and fall on your farm, that liability coverage also covers that part of it too, which we don't think about that much. Oh yeah, well, people aren't going to sue me if they fall down on my farm, but and then the next thing you know, you're in court fighting for your farm, you know, in this litigious society we live in today. But okay, so you know, that's all I had to say about it. I didn't mean to start a big, yeah, but, and I agree with you, Tara, 100%. Good business practices, you have insurance. But again, we're in a commodity farming type situation, and a lot of it's going commercial. And I think we did cover the fact that a lot of growers won't have it. And it depends on what their market is, you know, and if you want to market it to any professional type processor, or, you know, get into a, you know, where you're doing, I mean, look, I wouldn't be surprised if Whole Foods one day you can buy hemp or I think you can already. And even cannabis, if it actually was legal everywhere, you know, I guarantee you, and it'd be the same process, all the testing. It has to be untainted, and that, you know, and they don't care about the testing and produce. This is a thing that was mentioned earlier about the produce being, you know, like it's not as tested, right? But that's how they cover it. It's just, and I'm closing on that you can take your produce and sell it without it being tested to Whole Foods. But if they find it to be tainted, they're gonna get rid of it. They're gonna destroy it, and charge you back. But your liability insurance is what they're going by. They're not worried about the liability, and you can pretty much tell tainted fruit from non-tainted fruit usually, you know, unless it's lettuce in the West Coast. I don't know, but I'm sorry, I got off on a sideways thing there.
That's all good. Yeah, Whole Foods is going to find a way to get what they want or pass that liability back to the farmer, and they're going to want an insurance policy because they know that the prices that they pay the farmer, no farmer can creep out a living, so they better have an insurance plan to tie into if something goes wrong.
Well, I know if Steve said he had a real rough day, so I'm not sure, but I'll go ahead and ask you something I really think Steve would ask you at this point. He'd say, well, is there anything else that you want to promote or, you know, talk about in your company? There, Steve. Oh, yes, well, you know what I'm asking? There you go.
For a while, you guys have just been doing a good job. I've actually been here about 20 minutes. You guys have just been crushing it.
Well, you got any other questions for Caven, like that one that you always ask everybody?
No, is there any, I guess, closing statements closing issues that you wanted to bring up or address?
I'll take my closing seconds to say thank you all very much for having me. I had an absolute blast. Please get out there and continue doing what you're all doing. A second shout out would be for the Aquaponic Association conference. I greatly look forward to listening to Steve give his presentation, and hopefully I can fill in a little bit around the edges to help educate those folks there. And lastly, please get out there, fight the soilist, as I call them, spread the good word about aquaponics. Please don't let aquaponics get lumped in with hydroponics and with aeroponics. They both have their own benefits, and I'm not here to say people shouldn't do them, but when people are painting with a broad brush for all non-traditional agriculture, it does nothing but hurt our industry. So I'm going to take that platform to the Organic Grower Summit as well, where I'll be speaking for, I think, maybe part of the aquaponic industry, and talking about some technology disruption in the organic industry. So if you hear those naysayers out there, be quick to battle them with science and quick wit, and let's join together and help move the aquaponic industry forward. And thank you very much for the time.
Awesome. Where's that second? Oh, go ahead, Steve.
How do people find you if they want to take some of your education or find out more about your company?
Sure. So generically, if you Google Oklahoma Aquaponics, we're going to be the first company that comes up. After that, Eastern Oklahoma State College has some educational offerings for continuing education classes. Redlands Community College in El Reno does a 3-hour aquaponic class for credit. Our website is www.symbioticaquaponic.com, and I'm happy to arrange tours at any of our 100 plus locations across 10 states. So odds are we're closer to you than what you think. And, if at all possible, I'd love to get to your backyard. So feel free to holler at us, and we're able to help from one grow bed all the way up to hundreds. So thank you guys again.
Wonderful. Thanks so much for your time, and take care and look forward to seeing you here in about 2 weeks.
Yes, sir. See you there. Thank you, guys. Pleasure to meet all of you.
Now I'm going to see you. I'll hopefully see you in Kentucky State, so you'll be in my neighborhood that week. So.
Yeah, that'd be great. Come see me. And if anybody wants to come to Oklahoma, I got an extra bed with a nice window unit. It's about to be cooler in Oklahoma, so come on during the fall, and we'll have a damn good time on the farm. So.
When are you speaking at the Kentucky State University Aquaponics Association?
I'm with Steve. So I think he plugged the speaking time earlier. Do you have it handy?
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
So I'm speaking at, I think, 10 or 10:30. I think I'm speaking at 10:30, and then the aquaponic cannabis panel is at 11:15, I think.
Beautiful. So slide in. Around for the panel, and if that's not it, look it up on the Aquaponic Association website. No problem with the foot traffic.
Yep, definitely go check out the Aquaponic Association's website. They put on this wonderful conference once a year. They have people both from the education and school side as well as the cannabis side. I know it was Friday they have a hemp panel, and then on Saturday or Sunday they have a cannabis panel and a I'm doing a talk on probiotics and aquaponics as well. So.
Awesome. And last thing from here, I've got my lovely, talented new market and media director sitting across from me. When he took over our Facebook page, we had a measly 1,100 followers. In the past 6 months or so, he's built this up to two shy of 3,000. So if I could get those to you for Wyatt before he takes off for his Fulbright scholarship and heading to Paris, that would be absolutely ideal and a great going away present for him. So give us those clicks, check out our Instagram, our Facebook, and our social media. Do the same for everybody that's on this panel, because they're all wonderful wealth of knowledge, and I'll sign off and leave it to them. So thank you all.
We have a
hey, I also know JR, he's about ready to fall asleep there, but I know on cannabis, if you get on cannabis, he can also help you shout out and direct people over to Facebook as well. For you.
We also have a Facebook group called Aquaponic Cannabis Growers, and we have, 5,000-something members now, so I'm sure if you threw a link up in there, you guys want to join up. Steve and I started that group a while ago now. I don't even know how long ago, but it's obviously specific to what you guys do, so I'm sure if you throw a link up, you'll get a couple of subs, no problem.
Well, guys, thank you very much for the time.
Awesome. It was great, man.
See y'all.
Great seeing you.
Thank you. Take care. So what's up, JR? I haven't seen you in a minute, brother.
So I just wanted to say bye. Thanks, everyone.
Marty, what's with you? Anything you want to – actually, Marty, before you run, you want to plug the class?
Oh, shit, yeah. Okay, so October, Steve, what are the dates?
7th, 18th, 19th, 20th.
Yeah, 17th to the 20th. In October, here at my place in Gold Hill, we will be, looking at the, newly built aquaponics system here, some of my existing ones that I brought with me. We're building out the flower room right now, so that'll be fully functional by the time that rolls around. Hopefully be starting to run by then. We'll see, maybe early flower, we'll see how it goes. But and definitely check out the class. The 4-day commercial aquaponic class, we cover everything from making your own nutrients and worm bins and aquaponic system design, cannabis 101, just an insane amount of information. If you guys are familiar with our 2-day class, we do a 2-day online class about every 2 to 3 months. And we shove all that information into 2 days, and we call it Aquaponics 101, Cannabis 101. And we skip a lot of the commercial stuff. We skip a lot of the making your own nutrients stuff, and a lot of the natural farming aspects that we'll get to work into and focus more on the commercial stuff. And we have 4 days to go over content. So 4 days here in Gold Hill, Oregon, which is just north of Medford. There's an airport there for those of you interested in flying in. I can hear I-5 right now, my window's open. So we're definitely close for you drivers as well. So if anybody wants to come to that, that. Do you have the link for that?
That's apmjclass.com.
There you go. So check out the dates on that. And
oh, yeah, we're also going to have that both online and in person. So if you're wanting to do that, have it live online. We're going to do a recording on that. And depending on the recording, we might have it available after that. Marty and I want to make sure we have good quality recordings. There's another project that I can't talk about yet that hopefully next week I'll be able to talk about.
Can you put that in the chat for me? I don't have my keyboard right here to type that in. And then also, can you put our last guest's link in chat if possible? They're asking for the link or the page. Thank you.
There's Symbiotic Aquaponics was our guest. And the link to the class is apmjclass.com. That's AP as in aquaponics, MJ as in Michael Jackson, class.com. Michael Jordan, whatever. Michael Jordan's probably more politically appropriate these days, eh? Anyways, Marty and I teach that class. It's a lot of fun. And again, this will be the first time we'll be teaching the 4-day commercial class online as well as in person. So
at Marty's new farm.
Yeah, at Marty's new farm. So it'll be a lot of fun. So what's up? Thanks a lot, Marty, for joining us.
Bye, Marty. Have a good night.
Thanks.
Love you, brother.
So what's up with you, JR? You've been doing all kinds of cool stuff in Canada.
Yeah, I want to apologize, though, man. I'm in a lot of pain right now. I'm trying to hold it together here, but I'm not.
Well, dude, if you're in pain, then get the hell out of here. You don't have to sit here.
I was going to give you, if you got a chance to, what's up with cannabis and while you're
if you need to take off. Well, we are pushing hard. We're trying to get to our 10,000 member mark. We're almost there. We're like just a few hundred shy of it. We're really excited about that, and we're looking for, of course, to build our community, get the word out, let people know that there's a space that is safe for them to post and link within their post, a safe space for them to do that without feeling like they're going to be deleted or persecuted by the corporate social media platforms that are, you know, basically running the show right now. So we are at a grassroots level. We're not taking investment money at all. We're building this from growers, for growers, and for the cannabis community. And like I said, it's been a wonderful thing, and I appreciate everyone's support. I really do. But so you're coming into town Friday, Steve?
Yes, I'll be flying in around 10 o'clock Friday, and
Hey, JR, since you're in so much pain, why don't I set up a call with Steve and us tomorrow?
That would be great.
We can touch base. Let's do that. I can tell you're in a lot of pain. I thought you were about ready to fall asleep, but if you're in pain, I'm sorry, man.
That's all right. I'm just got to get, I got to get level where I'm laying.
Yeah, get your feet up. Probably get your leg up. Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate it. You got to be straight. Yeah.
I appreciate you guys. I really do. And I'll talk to you all soon.
Okay. We'll see you tomorrow, man.
Yeah, I was looking forward to talk to you. We'll have to hook up, man. Thanks for the invites.
Hey, no problem.
No, I do. I was appreciate that. I was like, wow, JR invited me to something. That was cool. So
how fun. Yeah, I'll try to not be so tired love and you. Hurting. It. Love you guys.
All
love
right. You. Bye, man. Have a great night. Bye. Wish you better. Wow. Yeah, I didn't know he was in so much pain. What a bummer. Yeah, I could. I thought he was falling asleep, and then I was like, "Well, is he falling asleep?" And then he's like, "Right there, he's right there when he answers a question." I'm like, "Well, he's not can't be falling asleep." Then I was like, poor guy.
What's new with you, Tara? Tell us what's new with your garden.
Oh crap! What is new with me? Oh my gosh, I have so much going on. I have just a million things going on. I took the clones out today finally and got them all planted. I have a grow tent. I have the grow tent finally put up. I have a light hanging in and a couple shelves. And so I have all my clones that I took out of my cloner and transplanted out into my grow tent. Cool. And then I have a whole bunch of males that I'm collecting pollen for Josh and other people that want it. I don't really care. And I'm just taking a whole bunch of clones because I want to clone everything I have in my garden this year so that if I want to grow it again, I can do that because I have never done this before. That's so awesome. I'm working on that. And yeah, so hopefully all the clones took. If they didn't, then I guess it wasn't meant to be. That's how I'm going to look at it. I thought it
was lovely that you chose to use your tent for propagation and storage of mother plants and stuff like that, or rather than try to grow and flower in it. That's perfect. I mean, now you're going to have all, because you've got access to all kinds of awesome genetics from several different sources and friends.
Oh, I do.
Yeah. So that's going to be great that you're going to have mother plants and always clone them so you always got some, you know.
Yeah. And then I always, you know, want to give them out to people so that I can get them back if, you know, something goes wrong. Just like I might lose one of my plants in the garden right now, where I don't want to really talk about that. That's like depressing right now.
Like a
so
pet. We'll
talk about that. But yeah, so that one, I might lose one and I might need a friend to get it back for me. So, which I know I gave it out, so I know I'll get it back. So I'm not worried. So it's all cool. And that's just the point of it. Like, I want people to be able to get genetics if they're good for somebody and be able to try and gift to one another. That's what my goal is, and get the knowledge out there. So that's really all I'm doing. And JR has been joining me on a live that I've been doing on my channel. We've been trying to do a regular live every Wednesday around 4 o'clock, kind of just talking cannabis around the world, because I have another gentleman that's joined me. And his name is Dan. He's from Australia and he is a filmmaker, and his first film was all about coming to America, and he actually interviewed Kevin Jodry. Later, when he got back from Australia, he also interviewed Joshua Steensland. And so it was a very, very awesome video. I think he did an awesome job, and now his goal is to do another film and come back over to America. So yeah.
Where's the link to that video? Now that you mentioned it, I'm sure everybody in chat wanted to see it.
Find it for you.
Yeah, you can do that stuff real quick. Yeah.
I had it right up here at my fingertips, but I've copy and pasted a million other things today, and I know it's not here now, so I got to go back and find it. But I'll put it in the chat before we log off. So I'll make sure I do that. What else? I have this little plant here that I'm going to, that's in flower, but I don't want it to be. So I'm going to try and re-veg it. That'll be a first re-veg. This is going to be my re-veg of a house plant. Let's play around with it, I guess.
Interesting.
What else? That's really about it. We're supposed to, I want to go to Portland, but my husband's like, honey, you got to quit going to Portland. So I don't know. There was some other events coming up and I don't know what's going on yet. So we'll see. That's all I got. There you go.
Hey, all right. Sorry, I got my mic working again. How's it going, Roger?
It's pretty good. It's been hot, super hot after the hurricane last week. We endured through that, and I got a bunch of debris, which are going to turn, you know, basically it's just pretty cool. It's all what blew down was mostly all the older, drier growth and all over the yard and everything. My fence got all tore up again. Second year in a row, the county made me build a privacy fence, and I built a privacy fence, and then it was the week before the hurricane last year. And it tore it all up and got it all fixed up and got it all ready and was still actually building on it in the process, because I finally started in putting a garden in a certain area. So I was starting to go, okay, now it's taking shape. I know where I'm going to put my picket fences behind my privacy fences, because I kind of make paddocks, which is, you know, like basically different spaces with gates that enter, that go, so you can have the dogs over here and a garden over here. And, you know, you just break up your yard a little bit. I got a pretty big yard. So we have a hurricane. It blew my damn fence all to hell again. So now I've got to go back and fix it yet again. So that went on. It's been hot as hell. My plant survived, though. We didn't have winds that really tore up anything in where I live for a change, other than just blowing debris all over the place. And so anything you had that was kind of light or whatever, you know, got beat around. But other than that, we survived. We didn't lose electricity, and 250,000 other people all around me from here to the coast all lost electricity. So I was very lucky that way. And, you know, and a big shout out to all the people on the East Coast that had to endure Hurricane Dorian. And a shout out. And I want to say to any of you that have $10, go to one of the Bahamas relief places and send $10, or find a find someone in your area that's it'd be more probably prevalent on the Southeast Coast, but I think it's a national story at this point. But there's many stations where you can donate cases of water, canned food, whatever. If you ever saw what happened in Miami area, Florida, after Hurricane Andrew, which literally leveled thousands of acres of homes. That's what the Bahamas looked like. It literally leveled everything in the Bahamas. And so I challenge all of y'all to donate $10 or a case of water or anything that you can by finding whoever's handling that locally for you.
That looks like they might get hit by another storm this week, which sucks.
Yeah, well, it doesn't surprise me, because that's how it happens. I mean, in 3 years, we've had 4 hurricanes here. And 2 years ago, and they all been around Labor Day. We had a Labor Day weekend hurricane. Then we had the next year, we had a Labor Day weekend hurricane. And 4 days later, we had another hurricane. And then we didn't have any of that really, you know, other than some wind blowing. Maybe we had one, I don't know, I didn't remember last year. And then this one here, which I always think, I hate when they take that track and it goes, oh, it's going to hit there. I say, that looks like it's going to hit Carolina. And we got lucky. It stayed in the ocean. It didn't make landfall here. But there was a lot of damage. But I do know some people on the island area, or, you know, whatever, in the inland barrier islands were not as affected as the beach, the coastal islands and such. And I'm not even sure about our farm. I'm still waiting to hear, because my partner in the Carolina Canna Connection, you know, out at the hemp farm, I'm not sure what happened because. I haven't, his phone went out and he said he was going to get back with me. So shout out to Ryan. I know you're busting your ass somewhere, but call me. No, I got his phone number. I'm just kidding. But we don't know what happened out there. I'm assuming that we lost pretty much everything. It was a late start thing anyway, for just to kind of test the waters. And unfortunately, I think this hurricane probably wiped out everything we had outdoors. Fortunately, we've got several plants, you know, quite a few, you know, to, I think 200 to 300, I'm not sure. There were 150 to 300, maybe somewhere in there, plants that were still in the nursery area. And, I think we're just going to roll with that and go indoors, and then, and probably using my greenhouse for the rest of it or whatever. I don't know. And again, we're going to, I got to get into doing that more, but this storm kind of, we were just trying to get rolling on this, the finish of the year, and get the indoor facility built. And storm kind of put everybody on the, like, you know, it makes you 2 or 3 weeks behind, because, you know, you have everything shuts down a week before almost. They quit doing mail or trash like on Friday, when the hurricane wasn't going to be here till Thursday. So, like, they just made a frick. If I wanted to rant and get pissed off, yeah, you know what? What in the hell are municipalities thinking when they shut off the frickin' trash pickup 4 days or 5 days before the frickin' hurricane? And I had to think about watching my language there. What are you thinking, governmental people, city council, county council, business owners? Pick up the damn trash. We don't need it blowing all over the streets and through communities during a hurricane. Pick it up, leave the trash barrels empty, the collection and waste areas empty, so that when people are trying to do cleanup, they have somewhere to take their trash. Okay, that's my public service announcement for the evening. And with that, everything else, it's just, we're starting over. we're starting everything over. We're very happy. I'm very happy to actually be able to just, you know, move on beyond being later with just being a produce grower and legally start growing a commodity that, you know, not only it's not so much that's going to help me. I'll make a little bit. I'm only interested in making enough money to have a nice living and basically have a nice place to live and eat. So, because I'm on the end of my life, I'm not looking to make $1 million, but I would love to take local farmers and regional farmers and help them turn their farms into productive hemp farms, doing it the right way and meeting compliance and growing a good quality product. So that's what I can see that I'm there now to at least start my journey there. And back to you, Steve.
Yep. So I've been traveling around. This is up in Toronto at the MJ BizCon International. That was really interesting, seeing kind of how the market's changing and evolving up there in Canada, as well as the international market. Had a bunch of good meetings about a project that hopefully I'll be able to tell you guys about next week, possibly as early as Thursday, although it's probably looking like it's going to be next week. You know how this shit is. You gotta wait until the company makes the announcement. And then
you can't say nothing until the company says.
They have your ass. So we'll wait on that and let people know about that. And then just working on some other stuff. A bunch of really cool things in the works. Some cool meetings in the next few days about some really awesome stuff, and then off to the Aquaponics Association's conference on the make sure I get the dates right.
The 21st and 22nd?
No, it's the 20th through the 22nd is the Aquaponics Association's conference. And remember, if you're really interested in it, please go check out the Global Gap certification training program they have on Thursday the 19th. It's available through the Aquaponics Association's conference's website. It's a really good chance to really get your head around some of the things that are going to come on to the industry and things that really are not talked about enough, and things that are going to very quickly become a headache for a lot of people if they aren't addressed. So really, really good to go out there. And then I'll be at the California Cannabis Business Association's conference on Tuesday, October 8th. I will be presenting with California Microturbine in Long Beach, California. That'll be a lot of fun. And then hopefully we have the class with Marty on October 17th through 20th. And then I'll be off to the next big operation that we'll be working on. So it'll be a lot of fun. And then I'll see everyone back again in the States for Emerald Cup and for MJ BizCon. So, and like I said, either Thursday or next week, we'll be able to tell everybody about that.
Well, I'll definitely see you at Emerald Cup. I am definitely going, and we have a group of us going. So it would be really cool if all you out there can make it. Meet up.
I'm trying to make that this year. It's so hard, but yeah, it's right around Christmas, isn't it?
Yeah, 15th and 16th, 14th and 15th, excuse me, 14th and 15th. Yeah, we're going to drive down, so in case we want to take anything back, because I'm definitely taking stuff with me, and I'll be driving down, I'm driving down, and whatever, and we'll be driving back, and so I'm going to be down there probably a week before, because I got invited to go over to Todd McCormick's.
Cool.
That was one awesome thing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So the MJ BizCon is the week before Emerald Cup. So it's 5 days of BizCon and 3 days of.
Oh, yeah. So
it's going to be 7 days of cannabis brutality.
My gosh.
Needless to say, like the day after, the 2 days after that, I'm not doing shit. I'm just going to get extra couple days in Vegas to recover, or Santa Rosa rather, to recover.
Well, I know how you hit it, so yeah.
Okay, till dawn. All right, well, we will catch you guys again next week. I will be zipping around. Tentatively, we're supposed to have the star glasses on. They haven't confirmed for Thursday, so if not, we'll have somebody else cool and interesting on. We have one other aquaponic guest that we're going to have on between now and the conference. The other person we'll be speaking with on the panel. And yeah, we have some other cool content coming up. We're going to be doing some really cool content starting in the end of October, early November, that I'm not allowed to talk about yet, but you guys are going to be super fucking stoked on it. Like, you guys are going to be even more stoked than I am, I think, on some of the cool stuff we're going to be up to, including what might be the biggest aquaponics operation on the planet when it's finished, or what will be. So
yeah, so we can't talk about that yet, though, so.
I just can't.
Oh, hey, enough already then. Yeah. Like, quit teasing them. She's already.
Right, gotta give them a reason. Find out next week.
Yeah, maybe. Have a fantastic night, everybody. Thanks for joining us in chat and everybody else out there. Bye.
And you can find Marty at AP Meds on all the different things. How about you, Tara? How do you find you?
Tara Lee Live on Instagram and YouTube. And here on Tuesdays and Thursdays when we're available.
What about you, Roger?
I love growingmarijuana.com. And you can find me on Instagram and Facebook. And after tonight, you'll be able to come find me on Cannabuzz also.
Yep. And you can find J.R. Schofield over on Cannabuzz or over at the DGC Cup Dude Grows Show website, over at Dude Grows. And or any of the cups. He's a big supporter. And you can find me at Potent Products in your favorite podcast app or on YouTube or WeedMap or WeedTube or Spotify or what's the other ones we're on? There's a bunch of other ones.
It's better just to name what you're not on.
Yeah. I like iHeartRadio. I always remember iHeartRadio for some because I always love that. So.
All right. Anyways, we'll catch you guys again next week. Cheers.
Oh. Our guest tonight was Kevin Smallwood from symbioticaquaponic.com.
Yep. Awesome. Cheers.